Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Beautiful Business Podcast, where I am joined by the wonderful Nikki Gattenby. And today we're going to be exploring all things culture and engagement, as well as considering a little bit of a passion piece for Nikki about how AI fits into the workplace.
I believe the most prolific AI tool that we are going to be using in 20 years' time doesn't exist yet. It's not been invented. So no one is late to this party. We just do not know. It's up to us, really, how we get hold of this and make it work for us. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could be our Saturday selves all day in the agency? Be that creator, be that innovator. Come up with an idea and say to the AI, I've had this thought. Can you see if that works?
Welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast from The Wow Company. If you're searching for the right strategies, tools, and connections to ignite your thinking and elevate your business, then join us for a fortnightly dose of inspiration. Our guests range from industry-leading agencies and cutting-edge tech pioneers to motivational speakers and executives, all offering actionable insights to help you thrive in profit and purpose. So, whether you're a growing consultancy or an agency leader, this podcast is your source of knowledge and encouragement to spark meaningful change in your business and beyond. Nikki's a bit of a living legend in the agency world, seemingly known by almost everyone. But for those of you that don't know her, Nikki has an incredible career history. She's led agencies in London and Paris. She's worked with some huge brand names, earned recognition for progressive thinking, for being one of the top inspirational people in the agency industry, and for progressive working practice. She was the MD at PropellerNet for 10 years, where her and the team transformed the agency to triple the margin, quadruple the revenue, and make 10 times more profit, hand in hand with being one of the top 15 best places to work in the UK 8 years running. Now, Nikki works with ambitious founders and leaders to take their agency to a whole new level. Nikki, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. What an intro. I'm good. Living legend. I'm going to go with that. That's fantastic. Thanks very much.
Just seems that everybody knows who you are, Nikki.
It's because I'm really nosy. I like chatting to people.
Amazing. Well, keep going with it. Do you know, you've got some incredible work achievements there. Absolutely amazing. But I just wonder, what's one awesome thing about you that we don't know?
I'm a bit of a speed freak. I like things that are slightly dangerous. I quite like mad, wild animal encounters. And I used to work in the automotive industry. So the first few years of my career, a lot of it was spent on racetracks. I also quite like riding, used to quite like riding motorbikes. I feel too fragile now to get on a motorbike, but I first got my knee down on the Donington racetrack. I was pillion and I went with a racing driver and it was one of the best feelings ever. So I quite like the adrenaline rushes, things like that. And my husband and I are big travellers, and one of the best adrenaline rushes we had was going to swim with the manta rays in the Maldives. And we got slightly separated from the group, and it turned out that we were within a whole group of manta ray cyclone feeding. There was nearly 100 of them, and we could have been in quite a lot of trouble. Not that they're aggressive, but they could knock you out. And there was cyclone feeding around us, and that was wonderful. You could hear me on the video going, it was an amazing experience. Just stuff like that.
Amazing. That sounds incredible. Well, I better not get too sidetracked by that stuff, because I feel like I could talk to you about it all day long. Some of the words that come up for me when I read about you and did some of my research: people, purpose, culture, engagement, they're all things that kind of spring to mind. I wonder, what is it about these areas in particular that are so important for you?
Well, we are still humans, you know, we're not robots yet. And if we are feeling good and enjoying what we're doing, we can come up with ideas that light up the world. And I started my career and had agencies in London. I thought it was absolutely wonderful in terms of the creativity, the innovation, the wonderful cerebral people. Did the ideas come out of everywhere? But it was also really hard in terms of people burning out and too many hours and treating people like robots when we're not. You know, we don't want to be cooped up like a battery hen in a tiny cage working in a computer just thinking, where is the light? You want to be working in an inspired environment, one where you're feeling good about what you're doing, you're loving working with the people around you, and you feel that you can bring your best self. That may sound really cheesy, but 15 years ago when we were at PropellerNet, that wasn't, it was, you know, setting the business up on well-being was a massive change from where I'd been in London. And a lot of my London mates are like, you're going where? You're doing what? setting up an agency and with well-being. I was like, yeah, it's really important because if we feel good, we're going to do better work. And I think the whole fact that we are human, we have to embrace with whatever's going on in the world right now. That's the most important thing for us.
Yeah, amazing. Totally agree as well. You know, it's one of those things, I'm glad it's more of a subject nowadays than maybe it was 15 years ago, but still an ever-changing, we're always searching for it, aren't we? Those perfect balances of work and life.
You know, I did quite a lot of research into it because it wasn't just a feeling. I could see the evidence all around me, and I'd suffered burnout, and it's not fun. I did it twice. Once is bad enough, two is just stupid. So I'd never want to do this again. I never want anyone who works with me to feel like that either. And there's loads of Gallup research out there. 70% of people in the world are not engaged in what they're doing every day. Only 30% of us are engaged in what we do. That 70% is a massive waste. How bad is that for business? And how much better could we be doing? So I kind of wanted to flip it and go, right, we're going to have an agency where we are really engaged in what we're doing. And the results stood for themselves. It was a lot of hard work, but in a different sense, it was much more focused in terms of putting people first rather than profit.
Yeah. And what sort of things did you do to put people first?
So our values were, there were one word values, but a lot of behaviours attached to them. Fun, innovation, creativity, well-being and adventure. And we would recruit off the back of them. You know, in an interview, I'd ask people, show me how adventurous you are. What do you like doing? What do you do outside of work? Show me what you do about well-being, taking care of yourself and other people. And at the time, they weren't usual interview questions. They probably very much are now. But things I remember from interviews I'd been in before where you were asked what kind of animal you'd like to be. It's like, okay, well, am I auditioning for some Amjam production or something? Or are you asking me to come to work and come with really wonderful ideas about how to make change for a client and create impact? So it was just living human values and weaving throughout our entire business and making sure that people understood what behaviours we appreciated and what behaviours weren't appreciated based on living those values. And we took it to the nth degree in terms of having an innovation station out in the Alps. And our CEO, Jack, lived out in the Alps. And people used to go out there and people didn't necessarily work together day to day and go out into the Alps, go and do some very challenging and different exercise out in the mountains with the idea of coming back with some innovative ideas as to solve it back in the agency. So we kind of really pushed the boundaries there. And then there's a whole thing about the Dream Ball machine, which lots of people may or may not know about. And I can go into more detail there too.
Yeah, please do.
So this was a crazy, wonderful, joyous ride where we thought, well, if people want to bring their whole selves to work, there's a lot that people do outside of work. You know, what people do on Saturday and Sunday is often very different from what they do 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Very old school way of thinking about it. But if you could be your Saturday self, if you could be the chef, the sports person, the dancer, the artist, whatever it is during your working day, just imagine how different that would feel. And this is really interesting when we come to talk about AI and robotics and that kind of stuff, because the human part of what makes us human is what's going to retain our value in the future. So if we could be our sassy selves day to day in the business, how wonderful could that be in terms of our work and the impact that we create? So we started asking people, what do you enjoy doing? What dream would you like to make come true within the business? If you can make this agency really successful, how can we help you make a dream come true? And the living manifestation of that was a Dream Ball machine. Jack found it on eBay. It's one of those old-fashioned sweet dispensers with a big glass dome at the top. And inside are the capsules. And inside each of those capsules were the names of people who'd passed their probation. Now, if we won an award or we won a new client or just because it's sunny, because there's no walls around dreams, we would release a Dream Ball and aim to make that person's dream come true. Now, that sounds very frivolous, but my God, it got some talkability in terms of people wanting to come and work in the business, and the loyalty of the team was pretty impressive. And also people's dreams sometimes didn't match up to what they actually wanted to do when their name came out. So when we released the first Dream Ball, we invited lots of people to the agency, including the local paper and photographers and other agencies and And we put the 20p in the machine and the Dream Ball came down and we hadn't tested it. At the Dream Ball, everyone was going, whoa, it was coming down. The Dream Ball got stuck. And then the photographer was going, the dream's too big for the machine, and taking photos. And it was utter chaos. Well, what a laugh. Eventually, we got the ball out of the machine and Steve went off to Brazil to watch the World Cup. In his dream consultation with me, he talked about wanting to spend more time with otters. So these things could be very different, but it just shows the creativity of the human mind that we have very different thoughts going on at different times. Now, what was wonderful about that was we started to think, okay, so if we can make dreams come true, that's amazing. People are good, massive loyalty, lots of talkability. But let's look at how that can actually connect to the business. And what could we bring into the business that could change our direction? And there are many, many examples of this. A number of them have taken us in a direction that we had no idea we could even go in. But our PR team were very much focused on creating value for our clients. And our strategy director wanted to go more into developing tech. And we came up with loads of thoughts and ideas about what could be done. Now, Gary is a mine of information all of his own. He was very focused on developing tech tools that could help the PR and comms industry. We came up with various different ideas, stress tested them with clients. And where we got to now, cutting a very long story short, is two SaaS technology products, Answer the Public and Coverage Book, both now independently bigger than the agency itself. What's interesting about that is retrofitting it, Coverage Books are automated coverage of all of the work that you can, all of the PR coverage you get for your clients without having to sit there and snip the coverage out of web pages and put it into PowerPoint. It automatically makes that a coverage book for you, a beautiful coverage book with all the metrics that go with it. And in our dream consultations, a lot of people said, I'd love to make this change happen in the agency. I'd love it if we could solve the problem of coverage books being such a pig to create. But the two things didn't align. In retrospect, we already had the idea, but we hadn't actually put them together. Now, there's lots of instances of things like that. But once you start asking people what problems they could solve, what they could solve in your business, you could possibly solve it across the rest of the industry, things really start to take hold. And you know, today, we stand at a place where the agency's thriving. I'm not MD anymore, as you know, I took my exit in 2019. But it's doing great. Recovery from COVID is amazing. Coverage Book is doing brilliantly. And we sold Answer the Public last year. So from asking people to kind of expand their minds, have a really good time in the business, we got great top talent. And that's incredible to be able to do in a world where 30% of people are engaged in what they're doing day in, day out.
Yeah, absolutely. Purpose is just so important nowadays for people, isn't it? There's something about not wanting to just be a small cog in a big machine anymore. You know, they want to zoom out and see how they can help and how they can change. And it really sounds like you gave them the opportunity to be able to do that, which is just incredible. And kudos and congratulations for the outcome as well. That's amazing. I've got to ask, with PropellerNet, you know, it sounds like such an incredible place to be, an incredible thing that you all built together. Like, you know, what, when you're on such a winning streak, what made you go, I'm stepping back now?
So I'd stood on the stage a lot and talked about the way that we'd gone from brand to global marketing services to two SaaS technology products whilst being one of the best places to work in the UK. And those two people said to me, would you write a book? Right, super engaged. And this gets talked about quite a lot in agency circles, which is wonderful. I kind of see the work coming back to me. It happened at the WOW event recently in March. And I should have known, because we're in marketing, I should have known that it would have been an incredible springboard, but into what I didn't know. And it got us a lot of attention, and me. And what happened was people called up off the back of it and said, can you come and help us do what you've done? And I was like, that's really interesting. Yeah, I'd quite like to do that. So I started doing non-exec work, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And that springboard of, you know, making other people's dreams come true, that kind of became, that's really what I want to do. It took a long time to work that out. It wasn't an overnight decision. It took a good 2 years to work that out. But then it's been possibly one of the best decisions I've ever made. Because I don't know about you, I never want to be last to leave a party or asked to leave a party even. I kind of want to go when everyone's still going for it. And yeah, you're kind of going out on a high. And that's kind of how it's felt at every step of my career. I've reached a point where it's like, this is brilliant. There's loads set up. There's amazing people here. It doesn't have to all hang on me. It doesn't all hang on me. But I found something over here that's really interesting. And I've been headhunted from job to job and thinking, and many other people have. And it's like, oh, didn't know that was possible. But doing the non-exec work has been amazing. It's been so liberating because I can help other people with the problems I used to grapple with. I kind of wish I had a me when I was developing the business. And I can help them not go through that pain, but see it coming and be that canary down the mine almost, but also bring on other specialists where needed. Because, you know, I'm not an FD. I understand agency numbers, but I'm not the person who could bring out a zero and make them make sense. I need someone to do that for me. But when those numbers are put in front of me in a dashboard that makes sense, the stories I can get to off the back of it and the directions and the impacts that we're going to have, all the changes that we may need to make are really impactful. And it's those wow moments that make me go, I'm doing the right thing. I'm really doing the right thing. And I can now have a ripple effect across many businesses, not just one.
Amazing. Yeah, I hear you. Those wow moments, just to sit back and watch. There's just something really heartwarming, isn't there? Do you mind explaining to me or to us, what does a non-exec director do? Just for those agencies that haven't worked with one and maybe thinking about it, what do you do as a non-exec director?
So I do two things. I am a non-exec director and a cognitive behavioural coach. So back in PrepareNet, we were looking at changing the way we ran the business in terms of being more coaching-led as opposed to line management-led, because it ups the levels of personal responsibility. It helps people learn for themselves. Most people know what coaching is, but if you take the sport analogy, people at the top of their game can still get even better by having a coach to help them see the things they can't see or help them find their own solutions to their own problems. So we put quite a lot of coaching angles into PrepareNet. I went for training, as did many others in the business, and tried and changed the way that we operated. So I do one-to-one coaching with founders, leaders, having been in their shoes, understand what their challenges are. And it can be really lonely being a founder or a leader of an agency, because sometimes you don't want to share the shit that's on your plate with everybody in the business, because they may go, oh my God, that's terrifying. I can often help people find a way to share it that's not terrifying, but it's more action-oriented. And also just let them release some of the stuff that's going on that they've not been able to talk to anybody else about. That's massively powerful. So the coaching is about holding up a mirror, giving people a safe space to talk. Everything we talk about is confidential. And that's kind of the whole process is about getting out of your head what you want to achieve. And you know that process of articulating it. Sometimes you just solve your own problem. And I can just go, amazing. Have you thought about these 15 things? Still want to do that? That's great. And just giving people confidence that they've explored what they need to. Because often we just need a bit of a, go on then. And that's a wonderful position to be in. With a non-execing, it's working with, obviously, coaching as well. It's more of a mentoring role. And I can look to help shape the vision for the business, the values, create a value-driving plan, looking at all the things a potential future buyer would look to buy because they want future value. And if you don't want to sell, let's just create that value for you. With frameworks and ways of working that can cut out a lot of the indecision that you, as you go on your journey to grow your business, you may hit on time and time and time again. I've not seen everything. I've not done anything by any stretch, but I do have quite a lot of insight, having worked with multiple agencies over the last few years now, as to what pitfalls we can fall into and where we might need to take action quicker. Quite an action-oriented person, so I help hold people accountable. I never beat anyone up. I'm a bit like, you said you're going to do that. And so, often we need someone to tell us that. We're okay.
I'm not mad, but...
yeah. Your shout, up to you. And it's a really lovely relationship because I can help the founder create the strategy and help the leadership team deliver on it with them, where they're all aligned to what's going on. It's things like there's lots of numbers in agencies, whether they're hidden in the management accounts, they're on dashboards, or they're just in someone's drawer. What my whole approach is to make them real, make them livable, make it so that they're memorable for people. And one of the things that really struck home to me when I was working at automotive was I worked with Nissan and they were about to go bust. They were bought for a dollar, taken on all the debt. And the people in at the top in the Nissan 180 turnaround plan, so the whole approach to turning around the business, and that one, that eight and that zero stood for something. 1 million cars, 8% profit, no debt. Everybody who touched the business had to have those as their metrics, whether it's people in the business, in the dealerships, partner suppliers, agencies, everybody. Everything we did, we had to say, it's going to affect this metric. How wonderful to distill a whole massive manufacturer down to three numbers that people could go, right, we're heading in that direction. Now, Nissan turned around in 3 years, not five, and they're actually one of the most innovative car companies on the planet. They brought the first mass market car electric vehicle to market before Tesla did. They came out with a Nissan Leaf way before the mass market Tesla came out. There was a Tesla sports car, but only about five people could afford that. So Nissan have really pushed the boundaries in terms of development, robotics, AI, etc. And I don't think it's just down to those three numbers, but that approach of simplifying what's complicated and making it real for people.
Amazing. And do you ever find it difficult to kind of manage both? Because it sounds like with the non-exec director side of things that there's a bit more kind of, like you say, there's a bit more knowledge that you can apply from your experiences. Do you ever get that feeling of, I know you said, like, I'm not mad, I'm not disappointed, but, you know, I'm holding you accountable here. Do you ever just want to jump in?
And Really tempting. I can't because I've got too many clients that I'm working with. If I did that, I wouldn't be able to work with them all. That's kind of my boundary. And also, I can paint the doom scenario or the joy scenario, having that action not being done could create, as if you want to deal with that, that's your shout. It's not going to be me dealing with it. So I can do it in a way where it will resonate with people. Because at the end of the day, I don't have any jurisdiction over the agency. I don't own the agency. It's not mine. I don't have any shareholder. It's the founder. And that's a very healthy boundary to have.
Awesome. That sounds amazing. And one of the things that I noticed when I looked on your website was that you use this term, which I'm just fascinated by, this talk about future-facing leadership. What does that look like?
Well, what's the quote? The first sign of madness is doing the same thing, expecting things to change. We all know this isn't new news. The world changes very fast. It also goes very slowly sometimes. But there was a lot of change going on. There's a lot of things to navigate. And I think what's different at the moment is for the first time ever, we are not sure how to control the change. I was doing a bit of thinking about this before. You know, we moved from farms to factories in the Industrial Revolution, took 100 years. We moved from factories to service businesses, took about 60 years. Service to AI and robotic is here. It's going to change relatively quickly. And there's a brilliant TED talk about how to govern AI, even though it's hard to predict, by one of the leading AI researchers. And one of the issues is no one can actually agree what AI is. So how the hell can we govern it? And if we're going to be leading businesses in a future that's uncertain, we need to be future facing. We need to be thinking about what's going to go on ahead of us. Back to the commercial conversation we have, you know, I'm not an FD, but management accounts and all that kind of thing, really good to have, but they are indicators from the past, things we can do nothing about. What we need to think about is leading indicators. What's going to change our future? What actions can we take that's going to make something different happen? Not doing the same thing, expecting change to happen naturally. We've got to be much more in that mindset and shape that mindset. You know, what's going on all around us, sort of 360 perspective, not just, oh, this is what the management account said and that's what's on my balance sheet.
And that feels like a really nice segue into AI, which, as I said at the beginning, is a little bit of a passion piece for you right now, if I understand.
I'm so intrigued. You could get terrified. I'm hugely optimistic. There's, you know, horror stories sell headlines, and that's what we're seeing a lot of at the moment, I believe. And I don't think that's healthy, because we can go down that rabbit warren and just end up in a really pit of despair, which isn't going to help anyone. Or we can see the opportunity for what's out there and get involved and embrace it. You know, when I first looked at ChatGPT, I don't know about you, I put in, I need a job description for us. It was a really crap prompt, but I need a job description for a strategist working in this industry. And a boilerplate came back. I was like, whoa, that saved me about an hour and it took 10 seconds. It's not right, but it's a massive springboard for me to do something from. And that's like a tiny, tiny slither. You know, we're in the first hour of all of this stuff happening over hundreds of years. And my mind's just going, wow, what a sense of opportunity. Because if we can change the heavy lifting in our jobs, the stuff we don't enjoy, back to those engagement figures, why are people unengaged in what they're doing? Probably because they're doing things that aren't that fun. It's not been created as an environment. They're drowning in numbers, or drowning about whatever it is. If that heavy lifting can go to something that's automated, focused, one operation to do, and we can be the more inefficient, and those people are going to hate me for saying that, we can do the exciting stuff that we do on a Saturday. We can be the dreamers and the dancers and the innovators and the creators and the people that learn because we make mistakes, which we outsource to the AI to do stuff that needs to be done right. Now, I know a lot goes wrong with AI and sometimes it makes stuff up, but if we can do tasks automated that we don't have to worry about anymore, we can spend our cerebral time thinking about the stuff that's really exciting. That, I think, is amazing. So there's loads of fatigue, and there's loads of hype and there's loads of horror stories. I don't think we have to get sucked into that. I am an optimist.
Good. We need them.
You know, I was reading about it. There's this brilliant prediction, because we are absolutely rubbish as humans at predictions, about in 1894, the Times newspaper predicted that every street in London would be buried under 9 feet of manure by 1950. Such was the frequency of the horse-drawn carriage being used around the city. Because they made that prediction based on what they knew. They didn't know what they didn't know. And I think we're in the same position. We just don't know what we don't know. And there's so much that we could worry about that could go wrong. But there's also so much that we can capture that could go right. And as agency people, we ideally need to be future-facing, on the front foot, learning, experimenting, getting things wrong, trying stuff out, not worrying that it's all going to take our jobs. Because it may take some of our jobs, the bits we don't want to do. It could leave space for us to do the stuff that's really compelling, maybe in less time. Maybe we want to be really involved in it. But let's not just go, oh, I'm not touching it because I'm scared.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have so many questions for you, Nikki. The first thing that I'd like to jump on is that prediction that you just said about the, what was it, nine feet of manure? Yeah. So I know you just said we don't know what we don't know when it comes to AI, but if you had to envision the agency world in 20, 30 years time, probably even quicker than that, to be fair, but what would it look like? How is the traditional agency model going to change with AI? And then I'm going to come back to this in 10 years time and we can see if...
You were totally wrong. Yeah. Well, the big thing is, I believe the most prolific AI tool that we are going to be using in 20 years' time doesn't exist yet. It's not been invented. So no one is late to this party. We just do not know. It's up to us, really, how we get hold of this and make it work for us. How I envision it, I hadn't really allowed myself the luxury of that thought, but wouldn't it be wonderful if we could be our Saturday selves all day in the agency? Be that creator, be that innovator, come up with an idea and say to the AI, I've had this thought, can you see if that works? I don't know if you know, but a lot of drone technology has been put through AI design, and a lot of it looks like flying squirrels deliberately because evolution's very clever and drones need to have the same kind of dynamics. That's one tiny perspective on what AI could give us, because they've gone through thousands of iterations, millions of iterations of what could the drones could look like. But actually, that's something that already exists that works very well. So wouldn't it be wonderful if we could work in that creative space and do the thing that we love doing at the weekend? I'm not saying, you know, playing racquetball, but we are exercising our muscles in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I think you seem so excited by it. I feel like it's almost contagious. But I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of, I don't know, concern about AI being out there. It feels like the industry is a little bit dubious about it coming into play. Why do you think that is?
Well, you've got the likes of Sam Altman, I've just got his quote here, saying that 95% of what marketers use agencies, strategists and creative professionals for will be handled by AI at no cost. You know, and if anyone knows what's happening with AI, he apparently does. And I've never met him, probably never will. Don't know if that's true. Elon Musk has been saying we'll have a driverless car in 2016. We haven't. You know, there's all these big predictions and they sell headlines. Of course they do. They get attention. It could be true, but there's probably 100,000 other ways forward. And it's how we react to those kind of things. If they make us fearful, make us close down, we're probably more likely to make them true. If we get creative and do what we do as agencies and we innovate and we bring in that thinking that we are known for, which why clients employ us, to our own businesses, I don't think the problem's as bad as he's saying. I think it's going to be different. There's an article with PricewaterhouseCoopers about the jobs that we lost, the jobs that we gained. We're likely to see economic growth through actually additional jobs that we just don't know yet to be gained. In terms of bias seekers or AI understand, you know, whatever those job titles are, I don't know what they are, but new things come in. There was this wonderful thing about, in the Industrial Revolution, there was people that would knock on doors, knock on windows and wait. Human alarm clocks, there we go. Before mechanical alarm clocks came in, people would literally go around knocking on windows to wake people up to go to work. I mean, what a shit job that is. We've kind of got rid of the bullshit jobs in some instances and created others. So if we worry about what we may lose, we may just focus there. And it's like, I don't know if you're a skier, but if you ski and you focus on the floor, that's where you're going to end up. If you ski and you focus on going down and ahead of you, that's where you're going to end up. So let's focus on where we want to end up, not in this pit of despair.
Ironically, I only know that phrase through motorbikes. So, although I don't ride motorbikes, but it just made me think of it. So I hear you, right? It gets rid of all of these bullshit jobs, as you say. And there is something magical about that, about getting people more engaged and not having to do those monotonous tasks. However, to play devil's advocate to this, what about those people who might be less skilled, looking for an entry-level role? Where does that leave them if we've got AI in place doing all of those jobs for us?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant question. I don't have a full answer for that, but we have a responsibility to work it out. We absolutely do. And how does education change to bring people through where they can navigate that? But again, you know, if you were in school in the 1800s and you were going to be a human alarm clock, what happened then? Jobs changed. You then went into a factory. You then went into the information age. You know, we can do it. We've done it before. The challenge now is the pace, because it happened slower before. Each revolution has quickened in terms of the pace that it goes at. So you're absolutely right. Brilliant question to ask. How we get hold of it, I think that needs quite a lot of thinking about.
And I guess the other thing or the other aspect that I can't help thinking about is, will AI, in your opinion, take away some of our power, creativity, problem-solving skills? And the reason that I ask this, right, I'm a coach myself, and a lot of the time I talk to people about time management. And I promote AI for time management. I promote these awesome tools that are out there where you can literally type in what you've got to get done, how many hours you've got in a day, and what the priorities are, and it churns out what your timetable should look like. And I do that for those people that really struggle, but there's a small part of me that thinks, are we taking away the problem-solving element of life when we can't just type that in for other areas of life? What do you think?
I'm with you. And there was a real example of this the other day. Lots of people I'm working with are using things like Otter AI to capture transcripts and notes for meetings, etc. Fair play. I'm a massive note taker, and I take notes that make sense to me and with the action it's going to impact for me. I've used Otter and others, and it doesn't make the same sense to me. So if you're not a natural note taker or a natural action interpreter, that may be very helpful. So you may lose that skill, or you may never have it in the first place, but there's other ways to tap into what you can do. What AI will do for us is, I believe, if we work in unison with it, it will help us all rise, all boats rise with the tide. And there's some studies about cancer diagnosis, and I'm going to get the stats wrong because I can't see them in front of me right this second. But when you work, if an AI can spot biopsy images, they get around 90% of them right. A human may get about 95% right. Human plus AI, 99.5%. That is an incredible differential in terms of what we can do together better. So it's about cobots and humanized AI. There's a brilliant TED talk by the guy who developed Siri, Tom Gruber. He talks about humanistic AI. So not about how can AI be super intelligent. How can AI make us super intelligent? That's kind of where I'm at with it. He came up with a great stat. If humans do nothing but read 24 hours a day for their entire life, they can consume 8 billion words. That's a lot of words. Today, most advanced AI are consuming 8 trillion words in 1 month of training. Now, that's incredible in terms of scope, reach, memory. And where he started going with it was treatment for Alzheimer's and loneliness and depression and real problems that we have today that we do not know how to handle. Can we treat them differently? There's a lot of progress that's needed. I was asked to do a customer satisfaction call with an AI yesterday. Possibly the weirdest experience ever. The people who set it up, I adore, I work with them on events, and they said, we're testing this AI tool. We just want to embrace it, want to learn. Absolutely, I'm back up for that. Will you come back to us with your feedback on the event using this? It was just weird because I knew what was happening. I knew it wasn't a human. It was a little cartoon face speaking to me in a human voice, playing back to me some of the things that I'd said. Felt really patronizing, very odd. And it took about 10 seconds between me saying something, hitting continue, to it going da, 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 and then saying something back. I get it. I want to try this stuff. I want to experiment. I want to see what it's like. But imagine if that did feel slick. My feedback to the organisers was, I love trying it out. I'm curious about this stuff. But if you really want to get good customer feedback at the moment, just pick up the phone.
Yeah, I love that. That's it's things like that that are so creative though, isn't it? That's super interesting. I wonder about using AI for talent acquisition. So I read something recently that specifically said that AI can screen CVs for us, and not only screen CVs, which I can only assume is it searching for keywords that sort of match up to job descriptions, but also to kind of initiate that conversation at the start with a potential candidate for the role. So actually reaching out to them to set up the interview stage with the first human interaction of the process. And I don't know how I feel about it, if I'm honest, Nikki. It feels like something that perhaps pre-COVID could have been quite useful. I know certainly I was in a hiring, a massive position where I was hiring for lots and lots of people at that time, pre-COVID, and there were too many CVs to kind of get through, and it would have been really nice to have maybe some keywords picked out. But nowadays, with the way that the workplace has changed and how much we are taking on board people and well-being, and like you said, just having your Saturday self, like what does that look like? Do you think there's a place in the workplace for AI talent acquisition?
If it was as sophisticated as it could be in 5 years' time, yes. But we've got to go on a journey to get there. I don't think it's right now. Having sat down with friends over this weekend, one who's applied for a number of jobs, one that got instantly rejected faster than a Google search return, she's like, wow, that wasn't a human, was it? I was like, no. There's a lot of responsibility required in what you're feeding that AI in the first place to make those decisions. I think it was Amazon with recruitment, it might have been Google, where they had trained their AI with too many biases toward white men in terms of recruitment and searching for keywords and CVs. And they only found that out where they were getting rejected everybody except white men. They're like, well, what the hell's gone on here? Well, you've trained it badly. That's the kind of stuff we've got to sort out. Because if we train the AI badly, that's down to us. Yes, there's generative, there's predictive, there's intuitive. It will get better. But if we could jump over this bit that's a bit rubbish at the moment, we can't, then yeah, maybe. But we can't have, like my friend had this experience where she was rejected in a nanosecond. She re-put her CV in with some different words in. And I think there was a language issue with her surname. And she changed it and she went straight through. Now that to me screams of really bad training. So I don't think we're anywhere near perfect yet. And I don't know when we're going to get there. And I think you're right. Where we are wanting to recruit humans who need to have a good experience, who are also choosing you. No, talented people have choices. We don't treat them like a robot.
Absolutely. I guess the common theme that I'm picking up in this conversation is that it could be incredible, but lots and lots of training to go into it first, however many days, years, months, whatever that looks like, that will take. When we get there, though, whatever there looks like, how do you think it will change the culture in workplaces, in agencies specifically?
Okay, let's take coverage, for example. It's not an AI as it was first originally developed, but it took heavy lifting out of creating coverage books so our team could concentrate on the insight and creative idea generation for the next campaign. That is a tiny microcosm of what could happen. Take away the stuff that we don't enjoy, because we can automate it. The layer of AI will make that even better. And really focus on the stuff that makes us human and creative and innovators and learners and experimenters. Give us the space to be, as I said before, inefficient. You know, all of those things we do are quite inefficient and we're very good at them. Robots are good at efficiency. Let's give them the stuff that makes things efficient. Don't make us do it. We hate it. Give us the stuff that we could play with. That's what's great for us.
Yeah. And then as a knock-on to that then, so all of these areas that we can play in once AI takes over those more monotonous tasks or, you know, whatever that looks like. How about leadership? How's that going to change with AI?
I think there's going to be a lot around authenticity that we need to get our heads around. Just going back to like the robotics world. Have you seen ABBA Voyage, I don't know how you pronounce it?
I've heard about it. Yeah. It sounds incredible, to be fair.
It is. It's mind-boggling. And you spend the first 15 minutes trying to work out if, have they done this? Because they're crossing over and they look like real people and it looks incredible. You can see some pixelation, but not much. And you're fascinated, but there's nothing like seeing the real thing. Say with like the Mona Lisa, you can't AI that. There's one that's authentic. There's going to be a premium on authenticity and good behaviour and good leadership. If we outsource everything, we might as well not be here. And some people say that's a good thing. Maybe it is. But if we can harness AI to solve some of the problems that we've created, you know, the past revolutions, we've created issues in terms of climate change, you know, striking oil and ruining the planet stuff. What can we do this time around, knowing that we may create issues and stopping them before they even become a problem? I think we're more educated now to know that when there's a big change, we can do things really badly. So let's have that safety net. And again, I'm not Sam Altman, I'm not Elon Musk, I'm not any of the big wigs who actually know how this stuff works, even though they're saying they don't all agree how it works anyway. But we've got to have some kind of provision for understanding and a right to reply to say what needs to happen next and be part of the conversation. This is why it worries me when I do see people quite fearful of AI and not being playful with it, because if you're not part of the conversation, it's really hard to have an opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really valid point for many areas of life, to be fair. Yeah, I guess I keep coming back to, I mean, we're not there yet, but the things that come up for me are about things like accountability and, you know, where does AI stop and where do humans become accountable? So, for instance, you've written two amazing books. If you were to write a future book, could AI help you or should we stop? Should that be a boundary?
Fascinating, because an editor helped me before. As I said, I'm an actual talker, not an actual writer. And it would have been really hard to read the blur that I put on the page. So, but a human editor who knows me and understands the way that I talk, the way that I work, it'd be an interesting test. Could you train the AI to do that for you? I don't know. I've no idea. But the one thing that does worry me is if AI goes the same way as social media companies. And I came across this brilliant term, excuse my language, enshittification, where they're set up originally, this is from Cory Doctorow, who's for the American Dialect Society, a writer. It's about how platforms decay. So originally they're set up to be positive and for the user, and then it's all about monetary extraction. Now that's going to be a problem because that's what's happening with social media companies. They're now about extracting money. They're not about the user. Shoot me down. If that's what happens with AI, we're in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. A scary thought.
Yes, we don't want enshittification of AI. And maybe it's not a laughing matter, but it's like things like that we've got to get our heads around. So how do we make it better? And talking about it, you know, this conversation will probably seem really naive in about a year's time. And fair play, because things are moving at such a pace, but we need to talk. We need to get it off our chest. We need to understand what's going on. And also talk about the fact that it's not all super and amazing. You know, Tom Goodwin, I don't know if you've seen him on LinkedIn, he's slightly edgy, a bit grumpy sometimes, and talking about the things that aren't right with AI and the fact that it can just be an amalgamation of the average of the internet. You're not going to get anything innovative from what's happening at the moment. Sam Altman the other day said ChatGPT is the dumbest version of the model we're ever going to have. Of course it is, because it's always progressing. But it's knowing that, you know, if you're going to put your product innovation in the hands of ChatGPT, you're going to get an edit and everything else that's out there. It's not wrong. It's just not worth anything. So back to the point about digital companions, making us smarter, working with the AI. It's not one or the other. It's not in competition. It's in collaboration with. And then us working out where we do supersede, where we come in that's better, and where what we can outsource to AI to make life better for everyone.
And do you think there will be varying opinions on that?
Oh my God, yes. Yes. All right, anyone listens to this, that's wrong, that's wrong. Don't believe that. Fine, that's very happy to be wrong. But it's about having the conversation. And, you know, often on that point, I will go in when I work with Lisa, their leadership team, and ask them to do a mini audit on their agency and score where they sit on various things. And the joy of that is not in the fact that people put themselves in different places, it's the conversation about the difference. Conversation about difference is so important. If we all amalgamate into the same, yeah, the same, well, we're all yes people, we're never going to get any progress. It's the outliers, it's the things on the edges that make the difference. So let's talk about the difference. If we don't agree, let's have a go at each other. Let's go, help me understand. Tell me more about your point of view. It's kind of a coaching approach to understanding something really difficult that no one's really got a handle on.
Yeah, sure. I'm also thinking about that as well, about, you know, it just made me think back to when you said earlier that the AI could do all of those kind of more basic tasks for us. Do you think that it will change that if all of our base levels are doing the same thing, do you think the output at the top will then be kind of similar? Do you think there'll be less authenticity with AI doing those basic jobs for us?
Well, if we think about this is where the human element really comes in. If we think about what difference the phone to the mobile phone has made to our lives, there's lots of negativity about social media and there's a lot about it in the news at the moment, but phones have saved lives. Phones help us get places. Phones help us do our banking on the run. You know, phones and the apps within them help us do a lot that we couldn't do before. Have we got addicted to them? Yeah, problem. So there's two sides to this conversation, isn't there? There'll be an upside, but can we manage the downside? When we struck oil, we started to ruin the planet. Let's know that. What can we do with AI to know what the upsides are and the downsides and how we manage them? That's way beyond my ability. But just to know that it's a thing and to watch out for it, I think is probably quite key.
Yeah, I think that's where the scary part of it comes into me, into my thoughts, because when you think about the younger generations, they obviously don't know the difference between the landline and the phone. And we see them, you know, walking down the streets face down. And I don't know how many times I've seen the images of what we're all going to look like in evolution and in 2200 or whatever. And I guess that's where the thoughts come up for me with AI, is that are we as humans capable of having those conversations and managing it effectively?
And I think it very much depends on us not thinking as humans as an amalgamous mass. You know, if we think about our Saturday sales bit of a theme with this conversation, it's just the thing that goes on in my head, but I think it's massive. People can be vastly different. Some people just don't touch their phones on the weekend. Some people are absolutely addicted to them. What's the grayscale there? And where do we want to sit? And what abilities do we have to manage the things that are difficult for us? You know, this as the news the other day about schools in France where they're taking phones off kids and looking at the time they're using them out of school and setting tasks and challenges around getting that time down. So it's not just the time in the school, it's time out of school as well. They're helping parents, because it's very easy to give a child a phone these days. I mean, I try desperately not to with our family, but it's sometimes it's like, rah, you just need to have some time to take it somewhere else. But I'd much rather be talking to them, mucking about, making cakes, whatever. It's how we take responsibility.
If somebody is thinking about stepping into using AI, what would be a good first step, do you think? Do you have any advice on what would be the first step an agency or an agency leader could take?
ChatGPT, just get your head around it, start using it. Beautiful AI makes beautiful presentation decks, to see how much quicker it can make you. Otter, if you want to record calls, how much use that is for you is entirely up to how you do it at the moment. Claude is like a slightly different version than ChatGPT, same kind of outcome. Jasper, you could just look online and say, what AI tool can I use for X? I showed a client Midjourney the other day and they were like, oh my gosh. I was like, yeah, so it's quite, I don't actually use Midjourney, but a lot of creative people I work with do. But then there's one called GenCraft Pro, which is really easy. I needed some Lego figures for a talk I was doing on it. I wanted a strength, a saboteur, an angel and a demon, and I wanted this to be Lego characters. There's no way I could have designed that. Stick it in GenCraft, got some amazing characters back. Thank you very much. It would have been an absolute pain in the ass for me to ask someone else to do that. And just, you know, watch some TED Talks. There's some massively inspiring TED Talks out there at the moment about what the positive side of this bit. They've all got what the negative we need to be aware of, but what the positives could be. Because I think we need to balance out these horror stories. Because horror stories, as you said, sell headlines. And it worries me that we can get addicted to that. And then we see more of that. And the algorithm serves us up more. Let's get AI to solve the problem of algorithms serving us rubbish.
Yes, please. Let's do that. Yeah, there's a definite shift in mindset, right? So rather than viewing AI with a negative mindset, having that positive spin on it, you're automatically going to find some areas, maybe not all the areas, but some areas to take away that could be beneficial or useful for the agency.
And maybe to really dumb it down, I don't know about you, I'm a bit of a foodie and I love going into foreign supermarkets going, I have no idea what that is, but I'm going to buy it because it looks hilarious. Or on a menu, I don't know what it is, but I'm going to ask. I want to try something new because it's all experimentation. There's a lot more at stake with AI, clearly. But if we are not in that experimentation mindset, we're going to close down. And that's possibly where the bigger danger lies.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well, that is awesome advice. Thank you so much. Okay, so I think it's really important. We are the Beautiful Business Podcast. So I really would love to know what beautiful business means to you, Nikki Gattamby.
So it's really easy. We wrote the book on it, myself, colleagues Tim, as Neil. It's about making money, creating impact, and being a force for good, whilst having a right laugh. Because, you know, if we don't laugh every day, I think there's something going severely wrong. And that's what we've got to hold dear. Laughter predates language. It's how we communicate.
Yes, amazing. So beautiful business means lots of laughter is what I'm actually hearing there.
Whilst you're making money, creating impact, you're being a force for good. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Very important stuff. Nikki, it has been amazing to chat to you today. Thank you so much for all of your insights, advice, thoughts on AI. And it's been awesome to hear about your history and how you're kind of building what you've built so far. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us today and good luck with everything. Let's meet up in a year and see how AI is going, shall yeah. we?
See how much was hilarious.
Yeah,
well, how much actually came true. Thanks, Chloe. It'd be great.
Thank you for listening to the Beautiful Business Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more advice and practical tips on what it's really like to build a beautiful business, visit our content hub at wowco.uk/hub or check out the link in the show notes.